Okay, welcome to the likely final podcast from E3. This is Radio Free Nintendo. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me currently, James Jones, Jared Rosenberg,
Double
Neil Ronahan,
Hey, everybody.
Michael Cole,
Hi.
and Aaron Kaluska.
Yo.
All right.
Heyo.
As we speak, E3 is over. We've played
Single tier.
dozens of games each, and rather than try to go through all of those, which would be impossible, I believe it was Neil who suggested using the final podcast to sort of go over our E3 Game of the Show nominees. So we're not necessarily picking a game of the show or something like that, but maybe trying to narrow it down to a few picks, sort of our collective or a group of games that we think are the games of the show from what we played. So I've got some nominees or some possibilities here for the platforms that we cover, and we'll go through those and try to narrow it down and really, think of, if we had to pick a few games to really focus on and get hyped for the rest of the year, for you listening at home to be hyped for the rest of the year, what are probably the ones to be the most focused on? I have previously gotten together and come up with this list, so we've already talked about this a little bit, but we're going to narrow it down. So, starting with the Wii, and I should say one criterion here was that we kind of focused on games that are exclusive to the platform or that had some kind of different version for the platform. I
No,
think.
no Rock Band 3, even though that was pretty
Right.
cool.
Rock Band 3 was one of the most impressive games I saw at the show, but I don't even know what version I played. It
360.
was probably the 360, yeah. Anyway, these are pretty much exclusive games with maybe one or two exceptions that I'll get to as we go. So the Wii possibilities, just the obvious ones that we wanted to address here are Zelda Skyward Sword, Metroid Other M, Kirby's Epic Yarn, Donkey Kong Country Returns, Epic Mickey, GoldenEye 007, Conduit 2, Tron, I don't know the
Tron Evolution Battle Grids.
Battle
Battle
Grid.
Grids.
Okay, I thought you said Battle Grizz, like the hype man on 30 Rock.
Maybe a lot better than.
That would be a pretty awesome
So,
name.
NBA Jam and Sonic Colors. And in the case of Tron and Sonic Colors, there are versions on other platforms for those, but I guess the Wii version is Sonic Colors is also on DS.
Yeah,
Yeah,
okay.
but it's a different game, and
Yeah.
that's my point. And I guess with Tron, I didn't play Tron, but apparently the Wii version is a different game
Yeah.
from the others, so it's completely different. So from this list, I think we all played Zelda, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It seems like an obvious, easy choice. Is there any kind of dissent here for this being game of the show?
I mean, mostly it was a demo.
A game of the show, not the
Yeah.
game of the show.
Mostly the demo was focused on learning controls and experimenting with the controls. It really wasn't a cohesive level design. It was very much a manufactured area.
Yeah. It
So
reminded me of a
it
lot of other Nintendo Zelda demos
right.
and other
Yeah.
Nintendo demos. Nintendo's really not good at the whole vertical slice thing. They really don't do that with their demos. Usually their demos will be like the first level or something like
Yeah.
that. It teaches you to play the game, but it leaves a lot of the progression and like advanced gameplay
Yeah.
stuff to the imagination. And
Well,
that's
just look at Other M. It's a
right.
textbook using
Yeah,
that.
Other M, all that stuff is from really early in the game, and it just makes it hard to judge. What it makes it hard to anticipate what the rest of the game's going to
Yeah.
be like, really. Other M is a case where I'm not sure that the demo they actually have on the floor is all that great, but that doesn't necessarily speak poorly for the game itself.
Yeah,
It's
because
just,
it's very much like that's like the first hour of the game.
yeah, which is probably the only hour of the game with that many cutscenes, with that simple,
Yeah.
of gameplay. So, with that little exploration,
Yeah.
probably the rest of the game's completely different. That wouldn't surprise me at all. And with Zelda, I feel the same way. I don't know how early in the game that is, because they did give us a lot of the advanced items. But
I don't think it's part of the game
at all. Yeah, I feel like it was maybe the environment will be used in the final game, but I think that area was just made for the E3 demo.
Really?
Yeah, there's just two bosses that are just sort of sitting there in their own little huts.
Yeah, so and it just basically gave you an opportunity to mess with every item you had.
Yeah.
And to experiment with, like, you know, the controls on the game, which, mm-hmm. I mean, I thought the controls were really good. They definitely, there's a learning curve to them, mm-hmm. but once you figure them out, it controls very naturally. It's fluid. I really, really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. With the sword, I really picked it up right away. I didn't really have any trouble at all.
Well, it was more, or the learning curve is more for the items. Like the bomb, like even though it wasn't natural motion, it was just kind of hard to get used to the fact, like, all right, I need to play this like bowling as opposed to what I'm used to in other Zelda games.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as someone who played very little Wii Sports Resort, I did struggle to learn sword play at first. But after 3 or 4 minutes, I had the hang of the basics. I mean, I was pretty slow with like fighting the skeleton boss because I was reacting pretty slowly to when he changed where he was blocking. Because basically he's blocking.
You did it quickly, though.
But yeah, you have to do it quickly. But I think it's a... You learn pretty quickly. I mean, it's not if you've not played Wii Sports Resort, it's not a barrier to entry, even though this game is highly leveraging the tech from Wii Sports Resort.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that there's a barrier to entry, but I did have a problem with the way the sword controls worked. Just that if you had the remote turned and tried to do certain directions, it just wouldn't do them.
Really?
And having a little bit of actual sword experience, it was really annoying to me.
What do you mean by having the remote turned?
So basically, if you're holding it straight out, then you can. I mean, horizontal cuts all worked fine, but anytime you try to do a vertical cut, you had to have the remote in a certain position. Otherwise, you'd end up doing like a horizontal cut or some other cut that it was not.
So based on in order to do the vertical cut, you have to have like the B button facing down.
Yes, that's as far as I could tell.
Mm.
If you
twist your wrist, right, and then try to do the vertical,
exactly,
it registers it as a horizontal.
Yeah, and it's like it's not using one of the axes for some reason.
That's weird. I mean, that shouldn't happen. I mean, I think there's enough sensory data from the controller that really shouldn't happen. So.
Yeah, so I don't know if it was just something that they hadn't set up right or what it was.
Yeah. But, I only played Zelda once, and it was the first game of the entire show that I played, so it's been a lifetime ago, it feels like. I enjoyed the swordplay a lot. The items, I didn't have time to get used to all of them or figure out what they were all for. But, yeah, it does feel like it's just kind of plucked out of the game with no context at all. And
traditionally, Nintendo's done that with all of their Zelda demos in the past. And they actually end up usually leaving it in their code, and you know, have certain means. You can play the E3 demos on the retail games.
Okay, well, anyway, we might come back to that. But Metroid Other M, the case for this being a game of the show, I guess you could say is diluted by the fact that it seems to be extremely similar to the demo that was at the Media Summit a few months ago.
It's basically, we count it as having two gameplay segments in the demo, E3 demo. One of them is from the Media Summit,
right?
Mm-hmm. Just straight up.
And the second one is 5 minutes long.
Yeah.
It's very short.
Yeah.
The new part.
I mean, they basically got rid of the tutorial at the very beginning because that would have taken way too long to show on the floor. Then they added that short section at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Still doesn't show much. It shows a newer environment, I guess, that's different from just like hallways. But
the bottle ship.
But,
I mean, in all honesty, well, I'm still excited for Metroid Other M as far as being a game of the show for E3. I don't know if it is, mainly because it didn't really show off anything new, and it wasn't really super impressive, at least to me. I'm still interested in the game, despite my worries, but it didn't wow me as other games did, or it wasn't new and cool.
Yeah. I definitely had a preconceived notion about Other M coming into the show and a lot of questions that I wanted to be answered, and the demo didn't really address any of that stuff.
Yeah, because it was nothing new.
The controls.
Well, it was new to me in that I hadn't played it before, but you know, this game is almost finished. It's coming out at the end of August, and Nintendo really could have kind of set a lot of people's concerns to rest and really kind of shown a, maybe not a huge chunk of the game, but a few different things that really show off what the game is all about. And they've decided not to do that. And I think, you know, to the detriment of the demo, at least, if not the game itself. But yeah, the demo ended up feeling, I mean, it was long if you watched all the cutscenes, but I didn't really feel like I learned that much from the demo, except that it needs a nunchuck option.
It's funny because that's a game that would probably benefit from having what the Zelda demo was, where it was kind of maybe a place that wouldn't be in the final game, but would show you off, you know, what the game's about. Because
having that
early section of it, I don't think really shows you what the game's going to be like.
You know, I think they were really all about the presentation, the graphics, the sound, because they had the headphones there for everybody. And during the media summit, they had, like, private rooms so that people could experience it without distraction. And I think that's what they're trying to showcase, and not actual gameplay, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, because the voice acting was not impressive.
Aside from the voice acting, though, the presentation is really nice, though. The voice acting and writing is pretty terrible, but kind of in a fun, campy way. You know, she's young and naive, and she's going to throw down that thumbs down.
She's young and naive? She sounds very, like, uninterested and apathetic.
Yeah, it's old Sam. She was young and naive. Now she just doesn't give a shit.
Yeah. I'm taking that off the list. I think Metroid could be a very good game, but
I'm still excited in terms of its
E3 showing. I don't think the showing was that great, so I don't think it would be one of our games of the show. So moving along, let's talk about Donkey Kong. We haven't talked about it a ton yet on the show and on the podcast, and I mean, it was a big surprise, you know, other than the rumor that came out like the day before. And you know, it's another 2D platformer like Kirby, which we'll talk about later, but Donkey Kong Country Returns is very similar to the old Donkey Kong Country games, even though it's made by a different developer. In some ways, it's similar to Jungle Beat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it graphically looks like Jungle Beat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are parts of, you know, the things like slapping on the ground.
Yeah.
That's straight out of Jungle Beat.
Well, you slap on the ground in Donkey Kong Country, too.
To make bananas pop up out of plants and things?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't even remember that at all.
It was, yeah.
There'd be like little spots on the ground you could see, like an indent or something. Yeah. And a banana would do that.
So Donkey Kong Jungle Beat basically took that from Donkey Kong Country and ran with it.
That.
But the punching of things, I think, comes from Jungle Beat, at least.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess the co-op part is interesting. You know, if you play it single player, Diddy is like a kind of a power up.
Yeah.
It lets you hover a bit and takes extra hits. If you're playing co-op, then Diddy's controlled by another person, but they can still ride on Donkey's back to sort of be carried through, you know, New Super Mario style through the hard parts. So there's some interesting stuff going on there. I do think all of us felt like the controls needed a little bit of work.
Mm-hmm.
It was slippery is the worst word with the controls in the game.
Yeah, Donkey is definitely a bit too slippery for my taste, and you activate this his roll or somersault attack by shaking while moving the joystick, and it's not responsive enough.
You can shake either the joystick or the remote, but either one just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, it was just sort of jolting, even though I think some of the slipperiness was in the original Donkey Kong Country.
Yeah.
Like having to do the roll with the waggle is not really appropriate.
Mm-hmm. For the amount that it seems like you're going to use it.
Because
it's part of the platforming as well.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll have, you know, Wii Remote on its side or classic controller support. I mean, that could be a pipe dream, but that would be really cool.
I hope so, but I get the feeling that Nintendo might squash that concept, even if it's proposed.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why the NES style is not an option, because it's not using pointer.
Yeah.
And you don't really need an analog joystick and a 2D platformer,
mm-hmm.
you know? So a bit of an odd choice in controls, but the game seems to be rock solid. It's definitely challenging.
Yeah.
Surprisingly
really,
challenging.
Really hard. I felt like a champ when I finally beat the minecart level today.
Yeah, that one's really brutal.
And they have the bonus rooms, which I only saw one of them, but I know there were other ones that other people played.
Yeah.
I mean, it really seems like they're really trying hard to pay homage to the other Donkey Kong Country games. I mean, even like these slippery controls, I think, are maybe intentional, maybe misguided, but intentional.
Right.
And when you're playing the boss, if you jump and you miss where you're supposed to jump on, but don't get hurt, you kind of bounce off a little bit.
Yeah.
It's definitely like what you would see in the Donkey Kong Country games.
Yeah. The boss battle felt very much like a Donkey Kong Country boss battle.
Yeah.
I thought.
Yeah. I guess the one thing I thought about the game was it really is a platformer in the literal sense. There are a ton of actual platforms mm-hmm. that you have to balance off of, and we haven't really seen a lot of those in platformers recently.
Yeah.
A lot of them fall out from under your feet, too, after a second.
Yeah, so that minecart level.
It'd be pretty quick.
I'm gonna have nightmares about that tonight.
So I think it demoed very well, frankly.
It's the kind of game that is conducive to an E3 demo, and that it works in small chunks that you can show off two or three different
levels. Yeah, everything that they showed was really cool.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a contender for one of the games of the show on the Wii. Now, let's come back to Kirby later since it's similar in some ways. But how about Epic Mickey? I didn't actually play this myself. I watched some.
I played through a lot of it actually, and I thought it was pretty good. I mean, it controls like a 3D platformer, very responsive. Mickey has a double jump, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, it's definitely good to compensate for the camera.
The combat was a little weird. I mean, you can spray the paint thinner and paint, and it basically is where you point, but it's a little confusing about the range. So the combat's a little strange, but...
And you can also shake to attack as well.
Yes, you can shake to attack, kind of like a Mario Galaxy type spin and attack. Kind of thing.
Just a stun.
Yeah. Doesn't actually hurt.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. But you can knock people into...
Right.
Break barrels.
It loses something because you can't attack and actually do damage. It's kind of weird.
I thought that the level design for what I saw was pretty clever, inventive. It made good use of trying to explore and notice what can be painted and what can be taken away.
Yeah, like it's very clear. Like just because of I know James talked about on the podcast last night about how the areas that you can remove or paint over, they're very clearly marked, and it's pretty. I mean, I could see that in the demo it wasn't super advanced or tricky or anything, but I could see that being really, really clever and cool as we go through the game.
And I got the sense from watching a demo of it that there are a fair number of choices in terms of whether you want to paint something or whether you want to unpaint it with the thinner. And the levels will play out differently based on which one you use. Yeah. So it's not just that there's all these things you can go activate, but it's whether you decide to activate them or not, or what you decide to do with them.
And there's some optional missions that I didn't really explore because I was basically just plowing through the basic gameplay. I didn't want to spend a lot of time on it because I'd watched the guy ahead of me play for 20 minutes. And, there are things like Smee wants you to help him rescue his friends, but if you don't do that, you can still continue through the game.
Yeah.
You just maybe will lose some upgrades I think if you do, you can progress, but you may not get a discount in the store, or someone may not be happy to help you later. Yeah, that would be
the reasoning for not helping people then? Is there any reward that you noticed? Or?
Well, because it's extra work and you may not really care about doing it. It really comes down to, do you want to do a side quest or not, basically.
Yeah.
And that's, it's kind of neat.
And the side-scrolling sections, which apparently there's going to be, I think, over 40.
Whoa.
That's what they were saying.
Yeah, I mean, they're on the shorter side, but they still were pretty cool. And the Steamboat Willie one that they showed seemed kind of like an earlier one.
Yeah.
So I hope they get more inventive as they go along.
I could see a Fantasia one being really
fun. Yeah.
Now, well, they didn't comment on which ones it would be, but basically they're pulling from classic Disney animation.
Right.
So,
and there's a lot of visual variety that you could get from those levels since they're based on specific cartoons from
Right. I don't think it necessarily like Mickey.
Sports when...
Yeah. And in the way they phrased it, they didn't imply that they were all Mickey cartoons either. So,
there could be Oswald the Rabbit cartoons?
I don't know, but I think there might be some Donald Duck cartoons. Who knows? Who knows? I don't. You didn't say that, but the way it was phrased with the demo guy who was demoing it to me, at least, yeah. said it was classic Disney cartoons.
Goofy instructional videos
yeah.
or something. Okay. So, but a lot of positive stuff on Epic Mickey. Should have played it. Goldeneye. This was one of those weird things we heard about a little bit before the show, and I played some multiplayer early on, but today I saw the single player demo at Activision, and that was a lot more impressive to me than the multiplayer. I played some extra multiplayer too, but the multiplayer does have a similar feel to the original Goldeneye in that you're in these sort of small internal areas. And so there's not a lot of wandering around looking for people. Usually you're going to find somebody pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And
I
noticed
that when I played them with my player as well.
You die and respawn pretty quickly and pretty often. So it's very arcadey feeling in that sense. A lot of wacky fun. But the single player, they showed the dam level and it definitely looks like the dam level from the N64 game. It looks better, but it reminded me of the dam level. But the gameplay, the level design seems to be a lot more sophisticated this time. You've got a lot better AI, more choices in terms of how to complete your objectives and what parts of the level to go through. There seem to be a lot of optional routes and alternative routes. So, It seems to play more like a modern, high-quality first-person shooter that you might find on the big boy consoles. And as I was watching the single-player demo, I thought, this may not be the straightforward N64 remake that a lot of people think they want, but what it is a Wii-exclusive shooter that seems to have extremely high production values and... a very nice modern design. I mean, I compared it to, in my mind, I compared it to playing through The Conduit last year, which felt like an N64 shooter in terms of design. It really did. I mean, it was a lot of straight corridors and things like that, extremely simple missions and very simplistic AI. And the Goldeneye level that they showed today was way, way better than any of that stuff. So it felt more like the mission I had just seen demoed for Call of Duty Black Ops. I mean, maybe not quite that crazy or complex, but on the same tier, So I think Goldeneye has the potential to be like really a pretty awesome exclusive first person shooter for Wii. That's how I felt. I don't know,
awesome.
What you guys all thought. I don't know if you all got to see the single player demo. If you weren't.
Jared did, right?
I mean, just from what I saw, one of the more impressive things was, they were saying that, they were putting a lot of work into the graphics. They had a lot of rain, which looks cool.
Mm-hmm.
There was a part where you're, like, looking out at the water. A bunch of ships are coming. I think, like, you or someone else shoots a rocket out at the ship that's out there. It blows up. There's also a helicopter right next to it floating, and it just looked really cool.
Yeah, I didn't even see that part. So maybe the demo I saw didn't even go that route. It's quite possible. But yeah, seeing the dam level made me really want to play this. I mean, the multiplayer I thought was kind
of
neat. But for
nostalgia
reasons.
I'm not ready to rush out and get the game.
Right.
It sounds like the single player might be pretty dangerous.
The single player, I thought, wow, I really want to play this. It made me think Call of Duty in a good way.
Yeah.
So, I
it's
think that's
exclusive
a,
to Wii, which, that's awesome.
Right, exactly. Conduit 2. I didn't get to see any single player on here. Did any of us see that?
I saw the single player. I talked about it on the last podcast, I guess. But I didn't get to play it.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm not sure how that feels.
Yeah. Well, the multiplayer seemed to be much improved.
Yeah,
yes,
I played a little bit of the multiplayer at Sega's booth, and It does seem to be a lot better than what was there before, both graphically and gameplay wise.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah.
I guess my feeling on Conduit 2 right now is that they're making a lot of promises in terms of fixing things and adding features and this and that. So a lot of it hasn't really been shown yet. And based on all the promises they made about the first game,
yeah,
compared to the reality, what
it's
they
like
actually shipped.
It's like Molyneux-esque.
Not that bad, but it just came out a lot less polished than I was expecting, you know, considering all the feedback that they were supposedly taking all the time and all the improvements they were constantly making. So I'm a bit in wait and see mode on Conduit 2, because if they actually do everything they say they're going to do, it should turn out pretty well.
Yeah, that would
well.
Be a fantastic game then.
But I don't have full confidence that they're actually going to, you know, execute on their plans for this. And it is on a shorter development cycle too. So I am eager to see how it turns out in the end.
And they keep reiterating that they're still taking lots of feedback from everybody about what to improve or what to include.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like there still could be some significant changes if necessary. But,
right. I didn't see anything that I thought was glaringly in need of attention, at least in the part that I played. But we'll see. Tron. You're going to have to... Tron Evolution. You guys have to explain what's going on with this one.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. It's, I guess, the closest feeling to actual Tron, but even cooler, I guess. It's sort of, there were three modes. There was just sort of like the classic Tron battle. There were Tron races.
Light cycle races.
Yeah, the light cycle races. Yeah, and then like a weird, like sort of tank cart to race. Or,
which was like
battle.
Someone that walked past, Aaron and I were playing a multiplayer in this, and someone walked past and was like, it looks like Twisted Metal, which was an apt comparison because it was car combat in an arena.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it controlled really smooth, but you had to get used to it. It's sort of like F-Zero in speed.
Yeah, it's pretty damn fast.
So, but besides just, basically, it had tilt control for steering, but it also had, if you push left and right on the...
You'd be able to do like 90 degree turns, really.
Yeah,
sharply.
Yeah, just like in you would see in the movie.
Yeah.
It also had like a jump capability,
which was very helpful.
Yeah, I mean, so you don't run right into the light wall.
But it was also cool because, like when you're playing any part of it, you know, your trail is dangerous, and if you did that jump, then if someone else was jumping to dodge something,
mm-hmm.
then they could still hit your in the air.
Mm-hmm. The trail that you
leave. Yeah.
And I guess you guys thought graphically it. Did a nice job of
it wasn't like the best Wii looking Wii game I've ever seen, but it definitely, you know, it ran smoothly and it looked good.
Nice neon lighting, there were reflections on the floor.
Oh, cool.
I mean, I assume there will be more to the game than just the three modes that we played. I assume like a story mode and something like that, which wasn't playable, but what was playable, I mean, it wasn't too in depth, but it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Okay, NBA Jam.
Who else played that besides me?
I played it today, and I thought I was playing against the computer. It was just the other controllers. No, there weren't enough people to play, I guess. So I just played by myself, basically. But I thought it felt very good, and you know, did remind me quite a lot of the original NBA Jam. Yeah. And I think it looks really cool. I think. The graphic style is something I don't know that I've ever really seen before. I mean, it's big head, but not in the cartoony Japanese way. It's more like the big head mode of the original NBA Jam, I guess. But, you know, the digitized bodies and faces are a lot more modern. You know, they look much better than they did back in the 90s. And the whole thing comes across as being very comical looking. But realistic in the sense that they are digitized models, you know. So
like
it's
looks,
not
it looks
totally
really goofy, It looks really goofy, but it still has that base of reality. Because
right.
Does it kind of like bobbleheads?
Yeah, sort of, yeah.
Yeah, it's like weird. You have to see it in motion to really understand it. Because I remember when the initial screenshots came out, I thought it looked awful. And then I saw it in motion and played it, and mm-hmm. I was like, wow, this is pretty damn cool.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a lot of fun, too. I mean, it's simple, but it's very fast-paced.
Yeah, it's simple, but they still haven't shown like they've just shown the classic mode. And
yeah, there's
shown
a remix mode that I talked about in that preview a while ago. That basically it's like the classic mode will be NBA Jam that you played, you know, back in the day, and the remix mode will add like power ups and crazy crap. Like
yeah,
that.
I don't think they're even finished deciding what that even means yet. But
and there's going to be tons of unlockable characters. I think they revealed some of them. I'm not sure the exact list, but they have a list of. Legends that will be in it. I can't think of any
names off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. And they told us today that they would like to get every single character from the original as at least baseline.
Yeah. I know when I talked to them, they said basically every star NBA player from when the original came out to now, we've asked about. Mm-hmm.
They already have the mascots in there. We played them today.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
But what about stuff, you know, like Bill Clinton and...
I know that was a big deal back in the
original.
Right, like, I know I asked directly, like, oh, what about Bill Clinton? They said, like, if you thought about it, we're trying to work it out.
Right.
So there could be something along those lines. Yeah. Maybe Obama will be playing basketball.
Right, I mean, I think they're trying
that
to
That would
be,
make a lot more sense than Bill Clinton.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're trying to be a little more careful with licensing now than back then. I think they just kind of put whoever they thought of.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think they can basically put public figures in there without having... It's parody, so mm-hmm. satire. Yeah. They don't really have to deal with that. But it's just a matter of... Well, I mean, Mercenaries 2 did it. You know, they had Obama and Sarah Palin in there like a week after the game launched. So it's unusual in this day and age for that kind of weird current events type thing mm-hmm. to be in games. But... not unprecedented, and mm-hmm. it does still happen occasionally. So
don't do drugs.
That happening. Yeah. Don't do that. Yeah, I remember that too. That was on a lot of arcade games back in the 90s. So yeah, in NBA Jam, it's a nostalgic pick, but I felt like the core, you know, mainly talked about a bunch of stupid extra bonus features, but. The core basketball gameplay, I thought, was pretty fun.
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, I was shocked that the motion controls worked as well as they did.
I had a hard time making my character release the ball at the right time, and I didn't have any instruction on how to play this, so it's possible that I just wasn't doing it right.
Is this game using Motion Plus?
No.
Okay.
It really controls similarly to the Mario Sports Mix basketball, but I felt that the NBA Jam... gameplay was a lot better than Mario Sports Mix.
Yeah. Well, for one thing, it's a side camera.
Yeah.
So it's a fixed perspective, and so you always kind of know where you and the ball are in some of the other basketball games. It can be a little confusing as you move towards and away from the basket because the camera's trying to follow you and the ball. So NBA Jam was just very easy to pick up and understand what was going on. Finally, for Wii, I have Sonic Colors, and I guess there's some contention on this one. None of us think it's bad.
No, the demo was not bad.
Mm-hmm.
The demo was not... This is Sonic Team. The demo was not bad.
Yeah, but, I mean, there was much discussion about this, but I mean, I remember thinking that the demo for Sonic Heroes was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then Mike, you and I both reviewed that game and thought it was terrible, so... Yeah. I understand the concern for that, but I didn't play the console version, so I can't really speak to it. It looks from like watching someone play it. It looks really nice.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to play. Mm. And I mean, like, I think we talked about it a little bit yesterday.
Yeah, we did.
It does. It seems to be like, at least to me, it's like Sonic Adventure meets Super Mario Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I mean, it is kind of like it's very direct, at least to me, that it's like Sonic's in a theme park in outer space. Like, yeah, it's like Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I mean, it switches between the 3D and 2D. Although I think the 2D on display, a lot of it was a little lackluster, in my opinion. And it was kind of easy. And sometimes it was 3D, but it looked like it was in 2D, and so you could actually run forward and wind up falling down and go back, fall down, go back to near the beginning of an area. So the 2D didn't wow me as much. I think I said this last night, that the 2D, it's a nice idea, but it worked better on Sonic 4 than it worked in Sonic Colors for Wii.
Mm-hmm.
But I like what they're doing with it. I like the idea, and I like that it looks like they're focusing on just the Sonic gameplay. And you know what? If it's a short game because they're just doing Sonic, that's freaking awesome. That's great.
Yeah.
I'd rather that than some other things they've done to pad the games out.
Right. No shitty friends, no Sonic transformations, and no alternate gameplay style or anything like that. It's just Sonic.
So if the criteria for the discussion is a good E3 showing, yeah, it was a pretty good E3 showing. Mm-hmm. I think it was a solid game.
Again, that's the kind of game that demos well.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, it's easier to divide up into chunks.
Kind of like Donkey Kong Country.
We skipped over Kirby earlier, so we can go back to that now. And when I think of Kirby, I think of Donkey Kong Country and vice versa, but just because they're both 2D side-scrollers, they're really almost polar opposites in terms of how they feel.
Yeah, Kirby's a lot simpler. Like, it's also a lot easier. You can't even really die in it.
Yeah, as far as I know. Donkey Kong Country, you're dying often. Yes. In Kirby, you cannot die.
Yes. Kirby has a very... This is Kirby's Epic Yarn, I should be clear, but it has a very easygoing, lighthearted feel to it, and it doesn't feel rote like other Kirby games.
It felt like Kirby, but it felt like Kirby updated, which I don't think we've ever really seen.
Mm-hmm. And not just with some slightly different, you know, power absorption mechanic or something, but like the core movement gameplay is different. You know, he can't fly, he can't inhale enemies, he doesn't spit.
It looks like the graphics are incredible.
Yeah, I think in terms of the overall visual style and kind of family friendly appeal, I think this is sort of getting at what Yoshi's Story maybe should have been. Yoshi's Story, not Yoshi's Island, but mm-hmm. Yoshi's Story,
yeah,
which
it looks a lot like
Yoshi's. Yeah, there's some parts of Yoshi's Story that definitely look like this game.
The Yoshi's Story, the N64
game. Yes, the N64 game.
I've still never actually played that.
It gets a bad rap.
I mean, the level design was kind of wonky in Yoshi's Story.
Following Yoshi's Island, it's not a good game, but standing on its own, it's not that bad.
Game has a very similar kind of laid-back vibe to it, but only with a clearer progression within the level design. And so I think it's a really nice balance between easy to play and uninsulting and to you know, people who maybe aren't very good at video games, but still has good level design, promise. I mean, it just has some promise in terms of the mechanics.
Yeah. Well, one thing I like about it is that even though, you know, it seems to be an easy game and it's certainly non-threatening, you know, and it's very forgiving and that you cannot die, it's not overly simple. I mean, I felt like in the levels that they showed,
there were a lot of things you could do.
There's a lot to do. There's a lot of secrets. There's a lot of interesting interactions between you and the enemies, between the two characters in co-op.
And the world.
And interacting with the world as well. Yeah. So I felt like, you know, even though I wasn't necessarily being challenged by the enemies or by, you know, the possibility of failing, I was being challenged by all the different possibilities that there were and all the different things that I might be able to do. And, you know, the level that they showed, I feel like, is probably early in the game, mm-hmm. but it has the three treasures that are hidden just like in Wario Land Shake.
Yeah, it's also developed by the same company, Goodfeel.
Right. And so I feel like as the game goes on, finding all three of those treasures could be a lot more challenging. Of course, it's an optional thing, but as long as you give me, you know, as an advanced gamer, as long as you give me some things to keep me engaged, I don't care how often I die. I don't care if I play through the whole game and don't die. That's not going to bother me. That won't keep me up at night. I don't like dying anyway. So I'm more concerned with, am I getting bored? You know, is this so easy that I don't care? Yeah. Like, I feel like it's just being handed to me. And even in the level that we got, I didn't feel that way.
Yeah.
In fact, the boss is
I don't think I ever really figured out how to beat him because my co-op, the person I was playing with, did most of the work.
Basically, the way like he would stick in his tongue and you had to grab his tongue, yeah. The boss was the button. Yeah,
it's hard to avoid some of those attacks. Yeah. You know? And you know, there's not much penalty if you don't avoid them. You lose some gems or something. But
yeah, it's you get ranked at the end of the mm-hmm. levels.
Yeah,
it reminded me kind of in Lego Star Wars. You don't die in that. You just lose like the little bits or whatever.
Yeah,
Lego
pieces.
It's like Wario Land 2 or 3. I mean,
mm-hmm. That's a good way. Yeah,
but I played that demo with just a big smile on my face. Yeah. I enjoyed the crap out of that demo.
It is incredibly charming, and I think Kirby is definitely one of my personal games of the show, just because you can't take your eyes off of.
I'm right.
It's
there
like
with
the 3DS yeah. in that respect. Like yeah. you look at it and you cannot take your eyes off of it. It looks so cool, and I think the way that it feels when you play it is very perfectly matched to that visual style as well. You know, it's very soft but interesting. It's soft but not boring.
Yeah.
Weird combination of adjectives there, but that kind of sums up how I feel about Kirby. I really like it, and I really want to see what more it has to offer, and I'm especially confident because it's in the hands of Good Feel, because the level designs in Shake It are just ingenious.
Yeah.
And that has always been my number one problem with Kirby, is that, you know, I feel like Sakurai or Wada or whoever was involved with Kirby back in the really early days came up with this idea for this kind of pink puffball, gave him a bunch of powers, and then really never figured out how to design levels that took advantage of those mm-hmm. powers. And so they ended up kind of making a lot of playgrounds, basically, for Kirby, but they never really... The only exception to that is Amazing Mirror, where you actually have to use a lot of the enemy transformation powers to get to certain places. Yeah. It's a lot more intricate.
There was a little bit of that in Kirby's Adventure.
Yeah, I was going to say, connecting it with this game with all the little secret hiding places and stuff, I think Kirby's Adventure, to get to a lot of those places, you had to use those powers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was one connection.
But a lot of the other Kirby games really lost that.
Yeah,
feel,
absolutely.
Lost that element, or just diluted it. And so I'm very glad that they've taken out the unlimited flight, and that the the Kirby
not
still transforms,
flight,
but
flight
it seems
too.
To be based on finding power-ups and not the enemies. And so, I mean, the problem with making the enemies the power-ups is that now there are way too many power-ups, and they're all over the levels. So, you know, you take out that part of it, and maybe it takes away something that had made Kirby unique, but I think they're adding a lot of new things that make Kirby unique with this game.
Yeah, it's like instead of altering things with the enemy's powers, you're sort of altering the level directly.
Right.
Which is sort of taking it to another level.
Yeah, yeah, Kirby is, I think, a really impressive game, especially when it came out of nowhere. So it's way up there on. I don't think we're going to be able to narrow this down. We've talked about these games, which is the most important thing anyway.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get this out there, especially, you know, before we go our separate ways and it's hard to wrangle everybody back together.
Yep.
And maybe we'll leave the process of selecting maybe like 3 or 4 of these to like a feature on the website. In the interest of time, we will leave that process for later, and especially for when we are more clear of mind, and when James is awake to participate. We'll move on to DS. I don't think this is going to take as long, because there wasn't as much for DS. It wasn't a big show for DS. You know, there are some really good games being shown, but overall, there's not that much development going on for DS, especially for like quality games. I mean, there's some shitware being done, but in terms of like really quality stuff, there's not a whole lot. So, who played the entire Golden Sun demo?
I did.
Okay,
I played both modes.
I played a few battles, but
I did both of the modes as well.
To be honest, I played through the battles, but I don't remember them.
The battles really didn't.
I don't remember the battles on the original Golden Sun. I mean, it is Golden Sun. I mean, you use your djinns and they attack and then they charge up, and I guess you can summon something once you have enough resources in your gin. But other than that, you know, it's a very standard RPG.
I guess what I was looking for is maybe a little more structure to the battles, or some kind of difference, you know, some kind of evolution. From what I played, I didn't see it.
Yeah.
You know, my problem with the battles in the original Golden Sun is that they were more flash than substance, and they always were full of these beautiful animations, and that certainly is still there. I think the battles are very nice to look at, but it seems like you are so overpowered versus the enemies. You have all these different spells. They all kind of do the same amount of damage. And then you have these gen that you can kind of use as much as you want, and they do a lot of damage. And it just seems like there's not a whole lot of design to it. You just kind of throw a lot of powerful attacks, and the enemies die.
But then again, it was a demo. Probably wasn't intended to be difficult. Right. So it's hard to say judge.
From a demo. But that was my view on the original games. Certainly nothing in the demo.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's what I was disappointed with.
And even in the adventure part of it, where basically you went around and you had the synergy powers of fire and push and like solve basic puzzles. Like, that's all stuff right out of
the adventure. They had a lot of puzzles.
But that was the best part of the original games.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that's back.
It's all stylus control.
Well, you can choose. You can play completely with the face buttons or stylus. That's just one thing I really liked about the game.
Mm-hmm.
You could play completely with the stylus. Well, I think maybe used the L button for something still. But
I think it's for the synergy. You can use the shoulder buttons or just tap at the corner.
Yeah, but you can. I mean, you can tap to walk where you want to walk, and then tap for the thing you want to use for the synergy to tap the synergy button, or you can use the D-pad and steer your synergy attacks using the D-pad. And they both are very satisfying. They both work well. So
that was the surprising thing to me, is the touch controls actually feel good.
They do.
And work well. Whereas like in Chrono Trigger and the Final Fantasy games on DS.
Chrono Trigger touch controls were pretty bad.
Yeah, and they're pretty bad in the Final Fantasy games as well. And I was like, you know, I just kind of tried the touch controls in Golden Sun on a whim. And I was like, oh, this works. And a big difference is, you get this little ring on the screen of your contact point, and so you get that visual feedback of, this is the direction I'm telling the character to go, and it helps a lot. It really helps a lot, and I think the menus are laid out very nicely for touch control as well, so you don't have to fiddle with tiny little buttons and things like that.
Yeah, so that was surprising. I think that's.
And you had some choice words about the text
in the
adventure part.
So Golden Sun's never had terribly good writing.
I completely agree.
And I think
I agree as well.
I don't know if it's that the localization was outsourced. I suspect localization was outsourced, was not translated by Nintendo, but more likely it's just sort of what Camelot thinks makes for a good story or good storytelling or whatever. And you know, there's definitely still be the, you know, the questions of, well, I don't think I did see any yes or no questions in the demo. But I guarantee you they will be there.
Did you see a lot of emoticons? And things
there like were emoticons. There were.
I did see.
Oh yeah,
that kills me.
Yeah, it's
emoticons are back.
I think half the story of the original Golden Sun was told through emoticons.
You could probably not read the text and still know what's going on. Yeah, okay, he's happy. He's sad.
Frustration mark.
Yeah.
Basically,
he's doing great.
You know, you could probably not read the text or the emoticons and still tell what was going on in the original Golden Sun. So that worries me, and the battle system worries me. But I do think Golden Sun looked really nice, and it did have those good touch controls. And, you know, knowing the sort of adventure part of it, where you're using magic in the world, in the towns, and solving puzzles, that's the part that intrigues me, and I want the rest of it to be.
Actually, sounds like the touch controls are like Dragon Quest IX, where you basically put down your spot, and then you have an arrow that shoots out in whatever direction you're dragging to, and then you run in that direction.
Yeah, well, that's the next game I was going to talk about is Dragon. There are a lot of RPGs on this list, but Dragon Quest IX, I did play it briefly, and you know, it's less than
a month away. I didn't spend too much time playing it,
and it's a very much a known quantity for people who are really following it. It's been out for a year in Japan.
Yeah.
I didn't try the touch controls, but
I use the touch controls, and the touch touch controls worked really well, similarly to Golden Sun, like Aaron said. And I mean, as far as the game in general, it's tough to demo an RPG, but it looks great. I can't wait to play it. And we have like 2 or 3 weeks at this point.
Yeah, it's coming very soon. And the one thing about Dragon Quest that really encouraged me and really got me excited is that I went out of the town and saw that world map, and the way it's set up is that when you're on the overworld, your character's down on the touchscreen moving around the overworld, and for one thing, you can see the enemies, so there are no surprise, there are no random battles. You know, you see the battles coming before, and you can walk around them in most cases. But the other thing is, on the top screen, you get sort of a regional map of the surrounding area. And what you see up there is a pretty big area. It would take several minutes to walk all the way around it and sort of explore all the parts of it. But then if you push the Y button, I think you see the world map, and you realize that regional map that was being shown before is a very small part of the world map. And it just gave me a great sense of scale, and it really made me excited to explore this huge world and kind of find all the caves and the treasure chests and the unique monsters and things like that. So that really got me excited, because that's kind of what I'm into Dragon Quest for anyway. You know?
Yeah.
It's sort of unfortunate that it wasn't out just a little bit earlier, so that we could actually all play it here, because
we wouldn't be playing the podcast, or we wouldn't be recording the podcast when we play Dragon Quest 9. Dave.
Yeah, because I mean, the multiplayer
would just
is,
be me on the podcast.
Multiplayer is a ton of fun, but there's no internet play, so.
Yeah,
it's disappointing.
But I'm gonna be coaxing my friend, be like, guys, let's play Dragon Quest 9.
But yeah, but I mean, the multiplayer is pretty cool, because you have drop-in battles. I mean, when you connect with each other, you're not actually all in the same area unless you choose to be. So you can explore different spots, and you can call your friends in to come and help you. But if somebody's already in a battle and you see them that they're in a battle, you can just walk up and then you get sucked into the battle, and then you can start fighting with them.
Cool. I can't wait to play more Dragon Quest. Again, it's hard to demo a game like that at E3 just because you're not going to see a big chunk of it, but it did look really cool. And that one thing, especially the map, it really gave me a nice hint of what's more to come. Yeah. And it's hard to do that in RPGs, so I appreciate it. Similarly, Final Fantasy, the Four Heroes of Light, I think several of us got to play this demo over at Square Enix.
I haven't talked to you about we played it at Square Enix booth, but this was the actual booth tour. Did you see anything new in the game?
Well, I actually got distracted and went over and talked to a guy that I knew, I saw nearby, and ended up talking to him about Cave Story and some other stuff. But anyway, I had played part of the demo earlier, and I think Carly played the entire demo, and she's not here right now. I think she's riding or sleeping, but
or both,
or just riding in her sleep. I think she liked it. I think the art style for Final Fantasy is unusual, and I guess maybe it's sort of a nod to some kind of Japanese art style that we're not really as familiar with over here. It's sort of pastel looking, but with very bland colors, you know, not a lot of blues and pinks and things, but more like browns and beiges and grays. So, I mean, it doesn't look as drab as that sounds, but it looks pretty drab.
It's a little muted, but it also has cel shading, but without, like, it didn't look like they had outlines. Like, certain things were cel shaded. Or it looked like
more like toon shading.
It was closer to toon shading.
Yeah.
At least the environments.
Yeah. No, not only are there no black outlines around the characters, I mean, there's not a whole lot of like lines. You know, there's not a whole lot of angles or dark lines in the game. It all looks very sort of soft. But the battle system I kinda like. The demo that they had was set early in the game. Did you play it, Jared?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, what do you think?
It seemed interesting because, what was it? The main thing was called Boost.
The ability points or whatever.
Yeah, like everyone, I guess, I mean, it might go up as you go along. Maybe, I guess everyone had like five, and you would, basically every turn you get one, or you could boost, or like you basically do an item or an attack.
Boosting would increase your magic, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. That's like one attack point. You regain one at the end of every turn, but to do magic, you need to have more, so you can boost to like recharge another one, I guess. It seemed to be an interesting mechanic, and I had fun screwing around with it in the battles that I played.
It's one of those things where you kind of have to build up a certain rhythm or a pace to the battle, because there are times when you should attack, and there are times when you should wait and build up more power and wait for the next go-around, and then you'll have more options because you'll have built up more of these ability points. So, and of course, the nice thing about that system is there are no magic points at all. So you can kind of use your magic very freely. I was a little disappointed to find that your health doesn't automatically regenerate at the end of battles. Cause, you know, that's a feature in Final Fantasy 13. I really like that because it lets you focus on tactics and not so much party management in between battles. But no, in the DS game, 4 Years of Light, you do have to kind of use items either during battle or between battles to keep everybody healed up.
So can you use magic to heal out of battle?
I tried, but I couldn't.
No, you can't, which makes sense because they're in a magic place.
Right.
You can use cure during battle.
Yeah, so it's a weird strategy of maybe not finishing a battle until you've healed your enemies.
Either that, or if you want to be really frugal with your items, then it's better to heal during battle because it kind of doesn't cost you
exactly
anything.
That's what I'm saying.
But you do that at the sacrifice of actually attacking or using black magic. So it might take longer. You might take more risk in defeating the enemies. It's an interesting thing, and you know what they showed us so early in the game that you didn't have that many spells or attack abilities.
Yeah, it was just fire and cure.
Yeah, it was really basic. But you know, I'm quite interested to see how all of these elements work at a higher level when you have a lot of options and you really have a lot more tactical choices to make in terms of how you use those.
One really cool thing in the demo was it seemed Square was having a lot of fun with character names or enemy names. There was this character enemy that looked like Ditto from Pokemon, except instead of pink was silver, and it was called Metal Flan.
Mm-hmm. Now there are Flans in Final Fantasy, but I've never seen a metal one. They're metal slimes in Dragon Quest, and there are Flans in Final Fantasy, but I've never heard of a metal Flan that I can think of. So, it may just be a case of, you know, maybe because this is an original title on DS, maybe they sort of reimagine some of the classic enemies. And maybe there's more of that to come. It's hard to say.
There will be metal everything.
It's a Metalocalypse.
Anyway, moving on to onto Metroidvania, probably, or are we saving that for later?
We can talk about Monster Tail right now. It's the only game I see on here that would apply to that later. Monster Tail is it's a bit complex to explain, and I would refer our listeners to the impressions that I wrote on the website. But it is the follow-up to Henry Hatsworth. And it does combine two genres, in this case, a sort of Metroidvania-style adventure with like a pet, like a virtual pet RPG, like a Tamagotchi thing. Tamagotchi is not my favorite kind of game, but I think the way they're handling it makes sense. And it is more entertaining when it's not an end unto itself. It's kind of a side game, and it affects what you're doing in the Metroidvania part, but it's something that the other aspect of Monster Tail, and one of the big differences between this and Henry Hatsworth, is that you never pause one aspect of the game to go work on the other. They're always both going in real time, and so it makes sense that the part on the touchscreen, the Tamagotchi part, is simpler because you're meant to manage that while you're still playing the part on the top. So it has to be something that you can kind of deal with in the background. You're aware of it and you make adjustments to it as it goes, but you're not playing a completely separate game down there. A lot of it kind of runs on automatic.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very interesting. It looks good. It sounds great.
Sounds really good.
And I'm very excited about the game design that we've seen so far.
Yeah. The only problem is potentially the controls, which felt a little, just felt a little slow or sluggish or floaty, or I don't know what the right word is.
I was surprised because it felt a little more sluggish than Henry Hat's work.
Yeah, which is already kind of
not the fastest game for sure, yeah. But you know, he is an old man. But no, I mean, in the new one, you're controlling a young girl named Ellie, and she gains a lot of abilities as you go through the game, and apparently her stats improve as well, so that might actually lead to some speed boosts and jumping boosts and a little better agility. So I'll reserve judgment on that aspect of it, but I'm pretty excited about Monster Tale. I think one of the biggest challenges it has is that the name kind of sounds really generic.
I mean, that's why when we were doing E3 appointments, I was in Monster Tale. It's probably some
it sounds like a licensed
title. Yeah. I thought it was like based on a movie or something. And then right. Luckily, I found out somewhere that Monster Tale is the guy from the Henry Hatsworth guys, mm-hmm. and I booked an appointment.
Yeah. I'm really, really glad I got to go play it because it looks fantastic. And it's very different from Henry Hatsworth, and yet it does retain a lot of the aspects, or at least the philosophies that I liked about that game, and how it mixed genres and kind of demanded a lot from the player. And you know, it's a Metroidvania thing. You know, the way the guys describe it, I'm like, you know, this is just, it hits me in the happy place. Yeah. So I like Monster Tale a lot. I think it needs a better title to get itself more attention. So Ghost Trick. Moving into some Capcom territory here, they actually showed two DS games, which is more than most companies.
Yeah.
So Ghost Trick is the sort of the new project from the Phoenix Wright team, and you can tell from the writing, mm-hmm. there's a lot of Phoenix Wright style in the writing, but the art style is a lot different. And it has that rotoscoped animation. I was very impressed seeing it.
Yeah. It's basically sprite backgrounds, and then the characters themselves, and a lot of things you interact with are 3D models, but with this special effect in how it's rendered that makes it look mm-hmm. very, very striking. I mean, it just sort of looks like outlines, kind mm-hmm. of. And the character art's a lot bigger too, since it's built for the DS. You know, it's
right.
Tiny little light artwork, so it looks good. There's some clever stuff there. The writing was kind of tweaked for E3. There were some in-jokes there, which were funny.
Pretty funny.
And the basic mechanic is good. I mean, the idea is you're a ghost, and you're possessing various things to basically rescue someone by changing the future. And whatever, distracting them or causing distractions for this guy who's hitman that's trying to kill someone. So... it's very clever. It's kind of slow paced. I don't know how well it works as an E3 demo, just because it takes some time to figure out.
It is pretty slow, yeah.
It takes some time to figure out what you're supposed to do. You kind of have to tinker around, and you might not be able to beat it the first time, but learn some things about the environment and then mm-hmm. try over and get a little further and say, oh, I'm supposed to do this here and then that there. Right. So
I thought
investigation in a different way from Phoenix Wright.
Yeah, well, I felt like it was this weird kind of crossover between a point-and-click adventure, which, you know, in that respect is a bit like Phoenix Wright, but also with some kind of quasi-platforming, in that, you know, as you're possessing objects and you have the short radius that you can move between objects to possess, and so you know, there's almost, not quite Geist, but there's some, you know, in terms of sort of jumping from one object to another, you have to find the right path.
Right.
And you have to think about how to use these different items and the environment to open up a path for where you want to get to.
It's almost like a Rube Goldberg machine.
Yes.
Yes.
I thought that's a pretty good comparison.
Yeah, if you look at the overall puzzles as being kind of...
It's also controls. Yeah.
Yeah, Ghost Trick is really intriguing. I've never played anything quite like it,
mm-hmm.
and I think
it's very inventive.
Yeah, it's really cool, and I can't wait to see some of the other puzzles. And you know, I'm looking forward to being able to play it without quite so many interruptions from the narrator and the tutorial parts of it, you know, because I feel like that broke it up.
Kind of like the same thing as Other Rem.
Yeah, broke it up too much. Yeah. I'd like to actually kind of play the game instead of being told how to play the game. So.
Well, in the second of the two parts of the demo, the narration takes a backseat to some extent.
Right.
So it gets better, and then there's some optional stuff. And that puzzle's
pretty challenging, too. I couldn't solve it when I tried it. I still don't quite understand how you solved it, but I'd have to see you do it.
Well, like I said, the first time you play through it, you're not going to solve it, but you may fiddle around and find something. Like there was a hint that you didn't, there was a ball that you could interact with that you didn't need to solve the actual puzzle, but it allowed you to try more than once so that you could say, oh, this is how this part of the environment affects an item in that position. And so it was useful. I mean, there are definitely hints built into it.
I've got Okami Den on this list, and I know some people liked it, but actually my first impression after maybe 10 seconds is that I don't like this at all.
I wanted
to like it. I wanted to be good, but the first thing I did was, you know, press the L shoulder button to bring down the
3 seconds or something.
Yeah. You know, to bring down the interface for your draw on the screen.
It just kills the pace of the game.
I don't understand why the game isn't played on the touch screen so you can just kind of do that anytime without having to, you know, maybe you push the button and it kind of freeze frames and then you draw. But why does it have this transition from the top to the bottom? It's distracting, and it takes at least a full second each way. It was just a huge turnoff from the very beginning.
It's like it's based on a false pretense that it's gonna take some time for you to switch from the D-pad and face buttons to the stylus, which for a lot of people, the kind of people that are going to play this game, they've probably played the DS enough to be able to do that within like a third of a second.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's having the same problems as, I guess, Onuma brought up the water temple and just having to switch off.
Absolutely. It's not, doesn't take that much time if you think about it per usage, you know? Like bring out the subscreen in the water temple to switch your boots or your tunic. Mm-hmm. It only takes a couple seconds, but when you have to do it 50 times per hour, it drives you fucking nuts. And Okami Den drove me nuts with, like, immediately. I couldn't stand it.
I mean, I definitely didn't dislike the demo as much as you did, but really, it's, I wouldn't call it quite game breaking, but it was just so frustrating when there was that delay when you're switching over. And then I also, I know TYP complained about this, how you have to direct the character, and that's another slow process because you add it on to the delay of switching it down, then you have to draw the path, then you have to have it go back up, and then you have to watch him walk on the path.
Yeah, that bothered me more than what John is saying about the going down and bend back up is annoying, but it's more annoying when it's for something tedious.
Mm-hmm.
Like saying, oh, go over here. Like during the battle sequences where you're drawing circles and stuff, I didn't really mind it that much because I would have to take a little while and say, okay, well, what do I want to do here while I'm pausing it?
Mm-hmm.
So that didn't bother me so much. But yeah, like the whole, you know, the equivalent of playing the Song of Commanding or whatever it was called in Wind Waker to control someone else. I mean, it, only less fun because you're not actually controlling them. You're saying, you go over here. I'm gonna, you know, it's like Phantom Hourglass or Spirit Tracks Heist.
Spirit Tracks.
So, yeah, I don't know. I see that they wanted to use the touchscreen for the item menu. I think they had to choose between using the item menus on the fly or having the brush on the fly. I think they made the wrong choice.
Yeah. I'm probably being unfair to this because I honestly didn't play it for more than about 90 seconds.
Yeah.
I didn't even play the part that you're talking about controlling. I saw very little of the upper screen graphics because I was just trying to figure out the drawing interface. And I did that a few times and I just felt so disgusted that I had to get away from it. And I went and played Ghost Trick, which grabbed me a lot faster. Mm. And, you know, I never went back to Okami Den, but it's just disappointing because going into the show, this was probably my most highly anticipated DS game that we knew existed.
Yeah.
And
I don't know. I was able to get over that. And I mean, if you can get over that, I mean, it's very much a successor to the Wii and PS2 game. I think I talked about it some yesterday, but I think that it'll really scratch that Zelda itch, and I'm hoping it'll scratch the overworld itch that is so missing from the 2D, the DS Zelda games.
I guess that remains to be seen.
It does, but, I mean, you walk around the town at least a little bit before you go into the dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
And even that, I guess there is that in the Zelda DS games, but I don't know. I'm pretty confident that it'll be closer to what we expect of a Zelda game.
Hmm.
Or used to expect of a Zelda game.
Well, I really need to give it a second chance, but it made a terrible first impression. Whereas the first time I saw the original Okami, I thought it was probably one of the strongest first impressions I've ever gotten from seeing a video game, just because of the art style.
The first time I played that, I was blown away.
Yeah.
That was back on PS2.
And that's not going to translate.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you
just
think that
of force power.
You think that, you know, the touchscreen is perfect for that, but I feel like the way it's implemented, it's not really any different than the console version. I think the console version was a lot stronger.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it remains to be seen with this game, but just from what I saw, that's how I'm taking it.
Yeah. Yeah, so I put this on the list just because I would have thought that it would be one of our Game of the Show contenders, but from what I've seen, probably not. Super Scribblenauts.
I didn't play it.
Who here played it?
I'm just gonna cut this off. I don't think it should be nominated for Game of the Show. They did add on the short list. It did add, you know, new controls, which work a hell of a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole adjective thing is really cool. They're deepening the level design, but it's just like it's more of the same.
Did they update the graphics at all?
No.
James, you played it?
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, it's... If you regarded the first game as being good, then this game is...
Great.
Yeah.
And if you thought the first game was mediocre, then this could be good.
This is a true sequel where the creators went and looked at what the problems were with their game and fixed them.
Yeah, when I was
and
talking...
And that's all.
They added more to it.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's very rare that someone takes their sequel and says, we're going to address all the major problems with it.
Yeah, when I was talking to Fifth Cell, they were like, here's what we changed up. So that was pretty much all of my problems with the first game.
Mm-hmm. So the beekeeper is no longer afraid of bees?
apparently robots can't hurt each other because all robots are friends.
But it's not just, oh, robots won't fight. It's explained. They won't fight each other because they're friends. The game's goofy.
Yeah. Sure. Obviously. But, I guess I don't understand your lack of enthusiasm for it, Neil. I mean, if it fixed everything, you know, if the argument for the original Scribblenauts was this game would be great except for X, Y, Z, and they fixed X, Y, and Z.
I don't know. I guess after playing Scribblenauts quite a bit, like, I mean, the concept is still cool, but it's just not as new and exciting as it once was.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's not that it's like old hat or anything, but it's just I'm trying to get excited for it, but I'm really not.
Hmm. Okay.
I don't know if anyone else wants to make a case for that remaining in the list.
I didn't play.
I mean,
I walked by it like 3 times and never stopped. I didn't really. I barely played it last year. It's just that kind of game that's so open-ended doesn't appeal to me very much because there's not enough structure in it for me.
And I think that's what they're trying to do, but even still with the level, with like the missions or levels that they showed me, it doesn't really look like super different from what was in the first game. Mm-hmm. Like there definitely is, you know, like it's a little bit deeper, there's a little bit more structure to it, but it doesn't look like it's super improved from how the levels were before.
Right. And they haven't had that much time
to
do it. So I wonder how much different it can really be. So we're almost finished here. I've got Professor Layton 3, which I didn't even know was on the floor. This is like a stealth
demo. In the unwound future, found out by reading the fact sheets that went out and everything today. That's coming out on September 20th. But, I mean, Professor Layton, the demos are all kind of the same, where they'll introduce you to the story, which apparently with this is that Professor Layton, I think, gets a letter from Luke in the future.
Where his voice is no longer absurd. Yeah.
And there's something
says Back to the Future Part 2.
Something about a time machine. And then Layton's like, there's something that's got to be done about your kids. But
so it's more Professor Layton.
Yeah, it's another like kind of ridiculous story, more puzzles. And, I mean,
I'm sure the puzzles won't be markedly different.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more of them this time. There's over 165, so at least 166.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a weird
thing
to say.
It could be where there's 165 puzzles on the cartridge and then the downloadable stuff.
Right.
In quotes?
Yeah.
We're all yawning in sync. Well, you know, I guess Professor Layton 3 is a completely known quantity.
Yeah.
But, James, you can at least, now you know when to mark off your vacation time. Watch.
Just knock it out in the afternoon.
Now we have the release date. Finally, for DS, Sonic Colors. Again, this with the Sonic, but I think the DS version.
I think the DS version
is a lot better.
The DS version is better than Sonic the Hedgehog 4.
It's the best Sonic game at the
show. Yeah, I agree. Yes. I agree wholeheartedly.
Everybody who played the DS game seemed to like it.
I couldn't get used to the controls.
Oh, really?
But it may have just because I didn't spend enough time and I'd been playing two other Sonic games right before then.
Yeah, you might have been overloaded at that point.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that it adds that much that wasn't in Sonic Rush.
Well, see, that's the thing. I didn't play Sonic Rush.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I played Sonic.
Yeah, so maybe it doesn't add that much, but it did feel really good. And
yeah.
I picked it up, and, you know, I'm not a huge Sonic fan, but I picked it up and immediately felt like, oh, I've got a lot more control over Sonic than in a lot of the you know, traditional Sonic games. And I felt like the level design was pretty interesting, too. It had a lot of things for Sonic to interact with, and not just spikes, but, like, things for Sonic to interact with that were fun.
I mean, there were balloons, which was like a Carnival Night Zone in Sonic 3, but that you could, you know, jump on and it would, like, pop you up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it has the homing attack.
Yeah.
But it wasn't overusing it like Sonic 4, which I thought was...
Okay.
Yeah, I
agree with you there, Jared. I thought it was overusing Sonic 4. That's not my other problem.
Yeah, the homing attack, I always thought it was kind of just made, it was too reductive for combat in the 3D Sonic games. But the way these 2D games, Sonic 4 and Sonic Colors, are using it is kind of nice because it's part of the platforming now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you make this huge flying leap into the air and you come up a little bit short of something that you need to get to, the homing dash can, in a lot of cases, will just target
it's
onto
kind
that
of like a
part
of
the
shape
environment.
In a Super Mario Brothers way.
Yeah, kind of. And it,
I a mean, little, it, a little, I guess, more precise.
And it looks different because you do see this target thing come up on some part of the environment. But, you know, if I push the button, I'll go to that. So then you can make the choice. Well, do I want to go to that or do I want to keep moving through the air? But that's the main thing I got out of Sonic Colors on DS is that when Sonic's in the air, which happens quite often, this game really gives you a lot of options on how to control him. You don't just feel helpless when you launch. You're not just going to land where you land. So you can dash forward horizontally. You can do the homing attack. You can ground pound, and then you can also like push X and turn into a fireball. And
there's the wisp power ups that are also present in Sonic Colors. I think the fireball one is exclusive to the DS version.
Oh, okay. Well, that's the one that they were showing in the demo. And that controls completely differently than the rest of Sonic. But it felt good and it felt interesting and it was built into the level design. So I felt like this was, wow, this is like a really tight, really interesting 2D platformer, Sonic or not. So that was, again, a game that just worked for me right off the bat. I was like, oh, I can't believe I'm enjoying a Sonic game this much, you know? So, yeah, that's Sonic Colors for DS. That's all of our DS lineup. And outside of Okami Den and Super Scribblenauts, I guess those will be our nominees for the upcoming feature. In terms of 3DS, I think we're just going to omit that for now, because there wasn't a whole lot playable. It was mostly videos where you could move the camera a little bit. Well, and what was playable, a lot of it was stuff like N64 ports. You know,
or a puzzle.
Or a puzzle, yeah.
But as far as the video goes, I think we can all say that Metal Gear Solid Snake Eater was the clear winner with that. I don't really think there's any competition.
Yeah, let me... What other ones did I have down? Kid Icarus...
The Kid Icarus video was impressive.
I think it looks great, but it has less camera control, and the 3D wasn't as pronounced. And it could be because Kid Icarus was done more like a trailer, so it had a lot of scenes cut together without much continuity, whereas the Metal Gear Solid thing was like 5 minutes of straight through, this is what Kojima wants you to, this is an experience he wants you to go through. And so it's basically Snake going from point A to point B, and a lot of crazy stuff happens in between. So it feels like a sequence that could totally be plucked right out of a game.
Yeah.
Whereas Kid Icarus is a trailer that somebody edited together.
You know? I mean, yeah, both of them still look good, and I hope there is a game made with the Metal Gear Solid tech that was used.
Right.
And the Kid Icarus game, I'm very interested to see how it plays.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely.
What other things you have on the list?
Resident Evil and Mario Kart, which I think were more proof of concept than anything. But
Mario Kart was beautiful. It wasn't that the graphics were super awesome. I think it was basically like GameCube models or something.
Yeah, roughly.
But for some reason, it was sort of mesmerizing. You just watched it, and the way the camera panned, and the track popped out. It was very pleasing to watch.
Yep. It's like par for the course with a lot of the videos, is that even if it was something like Animal Crossing or anything along those lines, it was a known commodity, like it still was engaging. Like even Professor Layton, which that's on the playable side technically, but that they just had on the 3D screen for part of it, it was Luke and Layton talking, and just the way that they popped off the screen was brought you into the game more and was more engaging, and that sense of depth is fantastic.
Right. Yeah, the Metal Gear demo in particular was sort of unique in that it actually showed a little bit of limitation to the 3D, and that was that because you could maneuver the camera pretty much anywhere, some of the polygons could get too close to where, basically virtually too close to your face, causing the 3D effect to break down.
You're panning with the rope that's coming, basically clipping with the camera.
Yeah, and I'm sure in an actual game they would check for that beforehand, but it was interesting to see that happen. And also, I've seen that before in 3D movies in the theater. And, so yeah, it's the same thing.
Huh. I didn't cause that to happen, I guess, the way I moved the camera. Yeah. But all right. Well, again. It's kind of hard to bestow any kind of award consideration on 3DS just because they weren't. It's hard to even know what was a real game and what wasn't. And even the demos that were playable were very short on the whole.
Yeah. Well, because when you were up there, technically you only had 20 minutes to run around the entire
area. Right. So, yeah, the demos were kind of geared for that. A lot of them were just 30-second long movies. Yeah. But, this show was not so much about showing a software lineup for 3DS. It was about showing the display, and everything was really focused on that. It was almost a pleasant surprise when you found out there was something you could control, because it was mostly check out this awesome screen, dude.
Yeah.
And
there was some success.
Yeah, like the pilot was from the resort. It was a full feature demo.
Right.
But other than that, I can't really think. Besides all the
Pilotlings and Star Fox were full featured games, but the most interesting interactive one, I talked about it before, but that question block game, I don't know what to call it.
It's called target shooting.
Target shooting. Okay.
Tech demo target shooting.
Yeah, there were some really cool tech demos, and I would not mind at all for some of those to be kind of packaged up together and maybe included with the system.
Yeah, like did we talk about the 3D jumper on any of the other podcasts?
No, and I didn't get to play it myself, so okay, maybe you can explain it.
So the concept of this is basically they show on both screens, it's the same image. One's labeled 2D, one's labeled 3D, and you control a cat on a pogo stick. Who's bouncing from square to square, but in the 3D you can see the depth of, you know, where the squares are, how far they are away from you, and in 3D space. At the bottom you see the 2D one, and you go through different stages trying to bounce your way up to the top. And by the time you get to the third stage, it's completely unplayable in 2D because you have no sense of where everything is. Mm-hmm. And it was a really cool way, and kind of was a proof of the possibilities of, you know, platformers on 3DS. Which would be incredible if that worked like that.
Platformers that are totally leveraged on 3D and cannot be played without it.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm kind of coming to this realization as I'm describing it right now, but like it's finally something on 3DS that could not be done on another system. It couldn't be done without 3D.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the question is, how contrived was it to be able to have the projection such that you couldn't play it in 2D? In 3D. On the other hand, it was definitely the demo that really showed what the 3D could do.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to see a platformer in that style.
I wouldn't, because I don't think I'll always want to be playing the 3D mode.
Yeah, I mean, the question is, just because you can do that, does it mean you should? You know, I guess the question is...
Well, I mean, don't make me drive.
Does it make it more fun, or does it make it more interesting, or is it just like, oh, neat? I don't know. I didn't play it, so I can't say, but it sounds quite interesting. I wish I had played it. So, anyway, we're not going to do awards for 3DS in this case, but look for some kind of follow-up feature to hopefully resolve the question of which of these games we talked about tonight will be our games of the show.
Well, I mean, one last thing on 3DS that I don't think has also been touched on our podcast is our Classic Collection. You know, other people kind of, I think Jared and Aaron kind of looked at that more in depth.
Yeah, and basically what that is a hypothetical collection of, say, NES and Super Nintendo games, but they projected the sprites into 3D space. So it's basically exactly what you would expect. It's old games in multiple planes.
Mm-hmm.
How they're going to package that, if they package that, is... still up in the air, but it's an interesting possibility.
Right. It could be part of a virtual console type service. Then again, it might just be a tech demo. It might just be a proof of concept.
Yeah.
It might end up being some kind of prepackaged retail release with several games available. We don't know.
I mean,
Nintendo might not even know right now.
It was weird. It seemed like they were just randomly having, you know, certain elements come out of the screen. Like, you know, the games, or 2D games like that, I don't think it really helped that much.
Mm-hmm. 3D. Yeah, I played Xevious. That was a separate demo.
I did not enjoy the Xevious demo at all.
Well, I don't like Xevious as a game.
That also doesn't help, and I think Xevious is kind of a crappy game.
It's very primitive, but I thought the 3D effect was... fine. I mean, it was subtle compared to some of the other ones, just because there's not that much going on the screen in Xevious. But I thought it was interesting to look at, especially for such an old game to be retrofitted with that kind of more modern technology. It was neat that it actually made a difference at all.
I mean, I wouldn't mind if they ported Vertical Force from the Virtual Boy over, because that's essentially what that game was.
Mm-hmm.
And it would work well in the 3DS. If we get a Virtual Boy, a Virtual Console, I don't know, but that would be one of the games that would be good for them.
What if they did, like, console recoloring of the Virtual Boy? I mean, why limit it to red?
Yeah.
You know, I don't mind red and black, if that's the best way for them to do it. But I do think that would be great. And, you know, I don't own a Virtual Boy right now, but I've played a fair bit of it in the past, and I think the 3D effect on the 3DS is just as good as you get from Virtual Boy.
Yeah.
So I think it's reasonable to think that some of those games could be ported. Right. Yeah. It's much easier on your eyes, for sure. because there, I mean, there were times when some of us played 45 minutes. So Aaron, you played 3DS for about 2 hours. I can't imagine you had the headaches and burning.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit different because I was going from station to station. I do worry that if you try to sit down and play a game the whole time, depending on how still you kept the system, would probably affect how much, I don't know,
ice strain.
You get,
but it's
yeah,
not,
I didn't
it's not piercing pain like Virtual Boy.
Yeah, Virtual Boy is almost shooting lasers into your eyes, isn't it? I mean, the display technology for that is
unusual. Yeah, it's LEDs and mirrors, yeah.
Right, yeah. So it's, 3DS is a completely different kind of display, and, you know, it's just as convincing, but I think Nintendo's learned their lesson on eye strain, and yeah. I don't think they're going to put out a system that's really going to bother people to nearly the extent that Virtual Boy did. But it does work just as well, and of course it's full color. So, anyway, we're going to cut the show off there. Thank you for listening, and I hope you've enjoyed the E3 podcast from this week. Send us your feedback and follow-up questions. Certainly, we will be entertaining those for likely months to come. So you can send all of that to RFN at NintendoWorldReport.com.
Or newscast at NintendoWorldReport.com.
There you go. And, of course, listen for an upcoming episode of
Radio Trivia Podcast Edition with me, TYP, and whoever else is probably in this room that's co-hosting.
Well, you recorded an episode, right, with Carly?
We recorded a brief episode earlier this week with Carly. It was only two songs. Two games.
Actually, two songs.
Four songs, really. Yeah, two games. And but hopefully we'll have another full length one near future. Mm-hmm. I can't commit to when I'll be able to record.
Yeah.
So.
And I've been talking to Andy and Zach in regards to the newscasting because we missed this week. Man, like this E3 and you're running this would be a little redundant.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I get back, I think sometime over this upcoming weekend we're going to record a special episode of Newscast, or I guess just this past episode late, which we'll focus on E3 most likely.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I hope we didn't sound too tired and blasé for you. We
I think that's impossible.
We are pretty enthusiastic about all this stuff, even if we don't sound like it.
It was a fantastic E3.
It really was a great one, and you know, it's just as always physically brutal. And we do tend to do these quite late in the day because it's the only time we can get everybody together and devote enough time to it. So energy-wise, it's not ideal, but we do try to get these shows out for you every day of the show, and I hope you've enjoyed it. So with that, we'll let you go. Have a good weekend, and look for us to return soon in the usual format.
Bye!